You've tuned in to Naturopathic Earth Radio with certified health consultant and former obese child, A. Gregory Luna, where you get the latest on clean living, natural remedies, effective weight loss tips, and sound naturopathic principles from experts and biohackers from around the world and Gregory himself. Don't be a slave to Big Pharma. Break free of the shackles of Big Food and start your journey now to a long, vibrant, purposeful life. Become a citizen of Naturopathic Earth.
Hello, everybody. This is A. Gregory Luna. Of course, you can call me Gregory. Welcome back to another episode of Naturopathic Earth Radio. I hope you've been doing well. Before we begin talking about the inside scoop on tech and the utter hypocrisy that is involved by the tech industry and the people who created it, find it, and run it, and how they use technology with their kids, I want to mention a couple of things here. The website's naturopathicearth.com. There's plenty of articles and blogs and recipes, essential oil recipes, food recipes, clean eating ideas, and so forth there. Go check that out. And please hire me as a health coach if you are in need to losing weight. If you need somebody to help you lose weight, I've kept 100 pounds off for over a quarter of a century. And also, we have created a Patreon account, which is a Crowdstarter account. If you go to the show notes of this episode, or if you go to the website, you can go to it. There's a link there. It's just patreon.com/naturopathicearth. And there you can donate from anywhere from $1 a month, $5 a month, $15 a month, and $50 a month. And there are rewards involved with donating. So please think about donating for us. It would mean a lot to Kate and myself. Also, I want to mention before we start here, if you've noticed, I'm podcasting a little less. I used to release 2 to 3 episodes a week. Now I'm going to try to scale back during this holiday season. Can't call it Christmas season, right? It's holiday season. To about 1 a week. I'm trying to scale back a little. You know, I need to focus on school and some other things. So just know that I'm probably going to be releasing an episode a week for the foreseeable future. And that could be running for 2 months, 2 6 months, 2 a year. I haven't decided yet. Okay, so let's get going. All right, so we're actually going to talk about 2 separate topics. I was perusing the news this week, and I noticed that the founder of Napster and a co-founder of Facebook, Sean Parker, had some comments that he made about social media. And I just thought it was very revealing. And so I wanted to discuss this. We did have an MPE radio episode about 4 or 5 episodes back where I talked about screen addiction. And I had talked about my personal experiences with my high school students and with children in my life and just being a human being and seeing the way society has become with our focus and emphasis on screens. And so I thought these comments were quite scary and quite startling. So I'm going to be gleaning from the Business Insider. If you type anything like Sean Parker, social media comments, the New York Times, Washington Post, everybody's been commenting on this. So Sean Parker, the first president of Facebook, and he's portrayed by Justin Timberlake in the Social Network movie, the movie that was done by David Fincher and Aaron Sorkin wrote it. Great movie, but has a disturbing warning about the social network. Quote, God only knows what it's doing to our children's brains. Close quote. That's ominous. Speaking to the news website Axios, the entrepreneur and executive talked openly about what he perceives as the dangers of social media and how it exploits human vulnerability. Quote, the thought process that went into building these applications, Facebook being the first of them, was all about, little quote, how do we consume as much of your time and conscious attention as possible, close quote, said Parker, who joined Facebook in 2004 when it was less than a year old. Quote, and that means we need to sort of give you a little dopamine hit every once in a while because someone liked or commented on a photo or a post or whatever, close quote, he told Axios. Quote, and that's going to get you to contribute more content, and that's going to get you more likes and comments. Parker added, quote, "It's a social validation feedback loop, exactly the kind of thing that a hacker like myself would come up with because you're exploiting a vulnerability in human psychology." The inventors, creators, like me, Mark Zuckerberg, Kevin Systrom on Instagram, it's all of these people understood this consciously, and we did it anyway. So, I mean, it is not surprising that the founders of all these apps wanted us to get hooked on their product, because, of course, they're going to make tons and tons of money out of it. Parker isn't the only tech figure to express disillusionment and worry about what they helped create. Tristan Harris, a former Google employee, has been outspoken in his criticism of how tech company products hijack users' minds. Quote, "If you're an app, how do you keep people hooked? Turn yourself into a slot machine," close quote, he wrote in a widely shared Medium post in 2016. Quote, "We need our smartphones, notification screens, and web browsers to be exoskeletons for our minds and interpersonal relationships that put our values, not our impulses, first." Amen to that. He continued, "People's time is valuable, and we should protect it with the same rigor as privacy and other digital rights." Close quote. In a recent feature, The Guardian, which is the English paper, spoke to tech workers and industry figures who have been critical of Silicon Valley business practices. Lauren Brichter, the designer who created the slot machine-like pull-down-to-refresh mechanism, now widely used on smartphones, said, quote, "I spent many hours and weeks and months and years thinking about whether anything I've done has made a net positive impact on society or humanity at all." Brichter added, "Pull-to-refresh is addictive. Twitter is addictive. These are not good things. When I was working on them, it was not something I was mature enough to think about. I'm not saying I'm mature now, but I'm a little more mature and I regret it." Close quote. And Roger McNamee, an investor in Facebook and Google, told The Guardian, quote, "The people who run Facebook and Google are good people whose well-intentioned strategies have led to horrific unintended consequences." I don't know if I agree with that. "The problem is that there's nothing that companies can do to address the harm unless they abandon their current advertising models." I honestly can't say that the founders of Facebook and Google and all these are good, well-intentioned people. I mean, maybe the lower level, the mid-level people, just like we've talked about with doctors, for example. But the high-level people like Zuckerberg, for example, data mining. That's all they do. Everything you search on Google, whatever you type is tracked. All the information you put on Facebook is tracked, and it's all collected, collated, and sold to third-party companies. All the pictures you've taken, have you noticed ever on Facebook where there's a picture and you notice how Facebook already knows the names of the people in the picture? It is frightening, and we're just so open because, again, the way these have been designed, they've been designed to tap in to our unconscious desire to be liked, to be respected, and to be in a community. And we don't think a second about posting, "Oh, I'm going out of town for a weekend," or "This is my daughter," blah, 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 blah. Just giving away all this information to people to use for insidious reasons. The comments from Park and others are further evidence of soaring public sentiment about Silicon Valley. Once lauded in utopian terms, companies like Facebook have now come under heavy criticism over their role in the spread of fake news and Russian propaganda. Yeah, it's interesting to see what's come out about that 2016 election of Trump, about all the hacking and all the fake news and so forth. It's pretty horrific. But to talk about this, I was listening to an NPR, I think it was On Point with Tom Asbrook, and he had a topic for an hour where people called in about what age are you giving your kids smartphones. And he was interviewing a woman that was no phone till eighth grade. I forgot the name of the actual nonprofit. It's like no smartphones till eighth grade. Anyway, so he was interviewing her and it was saying how that we should wait until at least kids are 14 to give them smart devices. And then he was interviewing a psychologist, and the psychologist was echoing what I've already heard before, is that the more you're on social media, especially teenagers, because again, their frontal lobe, their cerebral cortex of the frontal lobe is not fully developed. The longer you're on Facebook, the more anxious you are, the more depressed you are, the more isolated you are. So even though you think you're in this pseudo world of friends, all it does is really isolate you. And the psychologist was talking about how just children are not equipped to deal with smart technology and the internet and the apps and so forth. And people were calling in talking about how they've given their kids smartphones by the time they were 8, and the average age is 10. 10 years old, people are giving their kids smartphones many times, and I think the stat was something like 40% of tweens have unfiltered, unsupervised access to smartphone, iPhone or an iPad or a Droid or whatever. And this is shocking because they're two clicks away from finding pornography. They are two or three clicks away from finding just the most heinous things on the net. And so the overall takeaway was that we need to wait as long as possible to give our children smart devices. People were calling in, though, parents of teenagers and middle schoolers saying, like, I've tried to hold off as long as possible, but my kids are being ostracized and alienated at school because everybody communicates through texting and through social media. So my kids, since they don't have these devices, are being left out. And so there's this inexorable pressure because you want to do what's best for your kids. But at the same time, if they're being alienated and left out, you have to be sensitive to that. So the woman who's talking about no phones till they're 14 had mentioned that they have 55,000 pledges of people who have vowed not to give their kids a smartphone until they were 14. And she was saying how it really helps if you do it in the school, because if everybody in your kid's class has made this vow, for example, it makes it a lot easier and the peer pressure is less for the kids to get on apps. The other issue that was brought up was that the apps, the things that kids post on these apps is shocking. And since there's no filter and you're essentially by yourself when you're posting it, cyberbullying is just tremendous. And I'm sure some of you could comment on this. If you watch or you follow your kids' social media apps, what they post on Snapchat or Instagram or whatever, it's shocking to see how kids are horribly treated. And they used to mention how bullying used to be at school, but when kids got home, it used to be an oasis from them. So whoever was bullying them, they could get away from in the afternoon and evening to kind of recharge. But now it's flipped. It's when they get home, when they're on social media, that all the cyberbullying happens. Not as much at school. And I can relate to this because I don't see kids getting shoved in toilet bowls and shoved in lockers anymore. Everything is online. And so the Pollyanna part of me says, well, if your kids aren't on social media, then they're not going to get bullied. And of course, this is coming from someone whose oldest kid is 6. So I haven't really felt that burden, that crush yet. But it is definitely an issue. So the takeaway from there was like, it is the studies are showing, and the psychologist mentioned it on this podcast, how it is short-circuiting our kids' brains. It is shortening their attention span, which is not surprising. It is giving them FOMO, fear of missing out. And it is effing with their minds, so to speak. And so I thought, going back to this Sean Parker, the Sean Parker comments, is that this is all intentional. This was all intentional. These companies want to make money, just like every other company. Every company's predatorial in one nature. They offer you a service. But many of these multinational corporations hire psychologists, social psychologists, so they can learn and tap into the human psyche to get you to get hooked on their product. I mean, just look at Minecraft. Look at Angry Birds. Look at all these games that get us hooked. This is intentional. Sean Parker's admitting it's intentional. Yeah, we're like lemmings and sheeple. We can't get off Google. We can't get off Facebook and Twitter because we're addicted because that was their intent. All right, so let's take a break, and then I want to talk about Steve Jobs and how he was a low-tech parent, which is the ultimate hypocrisy. Okay, so what I learned also from this episode that I listened to, the On Point episode, if you are interested in listening, just look up On Point, one of the NPR podcasts, was that Steve Jobs, the legendary icon of tech, didn't allow his kids to use his products. So I'm going to glean this from a New York Times article. This was the big expose that came out a few years ago. When Steve Jobs was running Apple, he was known to call journalists to either pat them on the back for a recent article or more than often than not explain how they got it wrong. This is an author by the name of Nick Bilton who wrote this. I was on the receiving end of one of those calls, but nothing shocked me more than something Mr. Jobs said to me in late 2010 after he finished chewing me out for something I had written about an iPad shortcoming. Bilton said, "So your kids must love the iPad," he asked Mr. Jobs, trying to change the subject. The company's first tablet was hitting the shelves back at this time in 2010. Steve Jobs said, quote, "They haven't used it. We limit how much technology our kids use at home." Close quote. We limit how much technology our kids use at home. This is shocking. On one level, it's extremely shocking, right? The purveyor of this smut, of this freedom, of this technology, whatever you want to call it, this undiscovered country, to quote Shakespeare, didn't allow his kids to use it unlimited. But the audacity is that they want us, or they have no problem, or they don't give us any sort of like warning about how it's going to affect our kids. Going back to the article, Mr. Bilton said, "I'm sure I responded with a gasp and dumbfounded silence. I'd imagine the Jobs household was like a nerd's paradise, that the walls were giant touchscreens, the dining table was made from tiles of iPads, and that iPods were handed out to guests like chocolates on a pillow. Nope, Mr. Jobs told me, not even close. Since then, I've met a number of technology chief executives and venture capitalists who say similar things. They strictly limit their children's screen time, often banning all gadgets on school nights and allocating aesthetic time limits on weekends. I was perplexed by this parenting style. After all, most parents seem to take the opposite approach, letting their children bathe in the glow of tablets," all that blue light, "smartphones and computers day and night. Yet these tech CEOs seem to know something that the rest of us don't." Yeah, they have a lot of research, going back to the social psychologists they hire. They have a lot of research knowing how this is damaging us on so many levels. Chris Anderson, the former editor of Wired and now chief executive of 3D Robotics, a drone maker, has instituted time limits and parental controls on every device in his home. Quote, "My kids accuse me and my wife of being fascists and overly concerned about tech, and they say that none of their friends have the same rules," he said of his five children, ranging from 6 to 17 years old. Quote, "That's because we have seen the dangers of technology firsthand. I've seen it in myself. I don't want to see that happen to my kids," close quote. The dangers he's referring to include exposure to harmful content like pornography, bullying from other kids, and perhaps worst of all, becoming addicted to their devices, just like their parents, just like most Americans. Alex Constantinople, Istanbul is Constantinople, Istanbul. The chief executive of Outcast Agency, a tech-focused communications and marketing firm, said her youngest son, who is 5, is never allowed to use gadgets during the week. And her older children, 10 to 13, are allowed only 30 minutes a day on school nights. All right, good. Evan Williams, a founder of Blogger, Twitter, and Medium, and his wife, Sarah Williams, said that in lieu of iPads, their two young boys have hundreds of books, yes, physical books, that they can pick up and read anytime. So how do tech moms and dads determine the proper boundary for their children? In general, it's set by age. Children under 10 seem to be the most susceptible to becoming addicted. So these parents draw the lines and not allowing any gadgets during the week. On weekends, there are limits of 30 minutes to 2 hours on iPad and smartphone use. And 10 to 14-year-olds are allowed to use computers on school nights, but only for homework. Quote, "We have a strict no screen time during the week rule for our kids," close quote, said Leslie Gold, founder and chief executive of Sutherland Gold Group, a tech media relations and analytics company. Quote, "But you have to make allowances as they get older and need computers for school," close quote. Some parents also forbid teenagers from using social networks except for services like Snapchat, which deletes messages after they've been sent, which it really doesn't because you can just take a screenshot, right? This way, they don't have to worry about saying something online that will haunt them later in life, one executive told me. Although some non-tech parents I know give smartphones to children as young as 8, many who work in tech wait until their children are 14. Hey, going back to that wait, I think it's wait until 8th. That's the name of it, waituntil8th.org. While these teenagers can make calls and texts, they are not given a data plan until 16. But there is one rule that is universal among the tech parents I polled. Quote, "This is rule number one. There are no screens in the bedroom, period, ever," close quote, Mr. Anderson said. While some tech parents assign limits based on time, others are much stricter about what their children are allowed to do with screens. Ollie Portovi, founder of iLike and advisor to Facebook, Dropbox, and Zappos. Okay, I'm so out of this thing. I don't even know any of these companies that have been mentioned aside from like Snapchat, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Said there should be a strong distinction between time spent consuming, like watching YouTube or playing video games, and time spent creating on screens. Quote, "Just as I wouldn't dream of limiting how much time a kid can spend with her paintbrushes or playing her piano or writing, I think it's absurd to limit her time spent creating computer art, editing video, or computer programming." All right, that's true, touche. Others said that outright bans could backfire and create a digital monster. Going back to the author of this Times article, "I never asked Mr. Jobs what his children did instead of using the gadgets he built. So I reached out to Walter Isaacson, the author of Steve Jobs, who spent a lot of time at their home." He wrote the seminal work, the seminal biography on Steve Jobs. Quote, according to Isaacson, "Every evening, Steve made a point of having dinner at the big long table in their kitchen, discussing books and history and a variety of things. No one ever pulled out an iPad or computer. The kids did not seem addicted to all or any devices," close quote. This reminds me of something that somebody had called in, a teacher, an eighth grade teacher called in and said that on back on that On Point podcast, how about 25% of the kids in his classroom are always on their devices and how it's like whack-a-mole, how he tells one kid to put the phones away, another one puts it out, and it's just all we're essentially doing is just spending time on redirecting bad behavior and not really on instruction. And then so the host of On Point was like, "Oh my God, that's horrible, 25%. I was like, I wanted to call in. I'm like, look, I'm a high school teacher and I teach every grade level. And I hate to tell you, but it's more like 85 to 90% of kids are on their phones during class. And why? Because they're addicted. So is there hypocrisy here? Of course there's utter hypocrisy. I know a lot of people that are in really good private schools that completely forbid it. You cannot have phones at your school. They're not even allowed on site. Now, private schools are nice charter schools. A lot of these elite private schools that the Silicon Valley techs send their kids to, of course, have that luxury and recourse because they're a private school. They're like, if you don't follow our rules, get the hell out. We can bring in somebody else. But at public school, we don't have that recourse. You have to take in everybody. So it's a massive problem, guys. And I just think it's just utmost hypocrisy. This goes back to that study I told you about oncologists, how the majority of oncologists polled would not give chemo to their family if their kid got cancer, if their family got cancer, would not. So what do they know that we don't know? I think they know quite a bit. that chemo typically doesn't work for the majority of cancers, aside from lymphoma, testicular cancer, Wilms tumors, and a few other ones. So it's the same thing here. If the creator of tech is not allowing their kids to use it, newsflash, we shouldn't either. We need to put major limits. Now, even like my six-year-old, he saw a kid playing the one, not Minecraft, it's the one where you build Blockcraft maybe. And now he sees it. Like, every time he comes over, I only have one iPad. And he's like, Daddy, can I play Blockcraft? Daddy, can I play Blockcraft? Daddy, can I play? I'm like, oh my God, he is six and he's already wanting to play these games. And I tell him, no, go use your imagination. And going back lastly to that On Point interview, the psychologist was saying, simply saying that the kids are not using their imagination. You know, when we were younger, you had to go outside, you use your imagination, you get exercise, but your mind was allowed to wander and be creative. And that's not to say there aren't certain apps that you can use on an iPad, like painting and all that, you can. But most of the time, we allow the apps and the smart devices to be our babysitters. And so the kids' minds are being short-circuited, and their minds are not allowed to develop in a natural state where their imagination takes over, and we essentially do all the work for them. And that's what one of the things the psychologist said is, like, the apps create the world for these kids, so their minds don't have to work as hard to create the world that they want to be in. Okay, so let's finish up here. We live in a perilous time. It is a time of just great freedom on so many levels to do whatever we want. And vis-a-vis, when it comes to technology, it's very difficult because, look, we've only had this technology for 10 years. And really, we've only had cell phones and the internet for 20 years. But when it comes to smart technology, there's the studies are not there. We don't have regulation either, like government regulation, which I'm not necessarily embracing, but just they haven't been around long enough for us to really figure out what these things are doing to us. But the studies that are coming out are showing that it is daunting. And it's frustrating, guys, because as you know, if you have kids, there's times where you just need some time away from your kids. And so, of course, it's easy to say, go watch TV. And my parents did it to me all the time. They're like, Alberto, you need to go watch Voltron. My parents were for immigrants, so they have an accent. And so, of course, we used to do that all the time. And so now we're like, here's the iPad, go watch whatever. And it's definitely, I'm not casting aspersions on you because we've all done it. We've all done it. But it's like we eventually have to reach a point, just like, well, if we're feeding our kids junk food all the time because they whine for it all the time, like my kids do. We eventually have to step back and wonder, what is this doing to our kids? And if the founders and creators of these things are holding it back, that should tell us something. It's like a canary in the coal mine. If the canary's dying, that is a red flag that we need to change something. And it's just very difficult because they're so easy to use, and we can be addicted to them, right? We want to be on screens all the time because we like our apps and we're hooked in. But we have to like step back at a certain point and just put them away, limit them. We got to limit it with the kids. We got to limit it with the kids, even if it makes it harder on us. And we have to limit it on ourselves. If you notice that you're on Facebook 2-3 hours a night, or social media, or anytime you have any downtime, like in your car or at a stoplight, a stop sign or a stoplight in the car, and you're pulling out the phone every second, you're wired or hooked, we need to step back and look at that and be like, this is not healthy. We need time to just let our mind wander. I've talked about that previously, how the studies are showing that we're never bored. We're never just sitting in silence and just letting our mind wander and be bored. Some of the best ideas come up when our mind is silenced. But with social media, we're on this perpetual state of vigilance. We are always on. That's why you have the phantom phone syndrome, right? Where you think your phone goes off when it doesn't. We are constantly attached to our phone, where we think that essentially we can't live without it. And even the studies are showing, like, even when the kids have a phone on their desk during school, they're not fully paying attention to what's going on with the instruction, because half their mind is on that. Am I going to get a text? Am I going to get a message? What's going on? Oh my God, I'm missing something out. So it's a pervasive problem on every level of society. And we're, and really in regards to this is like the kids, we got to do it for the kids, right? We got to think of those toddlers, guys. We got to put in some form of restrictions. And if you guys do it, God bless you. And ideally, I want to do it. I've always said before I had kids that we would, the woman in my life and myself would only have one computer. We'd have it in the living room. We would only allow them to do work on that computer in the living room. And then we would unplug the modem at night. My intention is still very clear. I will not give my kids a smartphone. Now, going back to this podcast, the wait until eighth, they were saying that, look, you can give your kids a flip-up phone or flip-down phone. Those are okay because, again, there's no social media on it, and that allows them to text and to stay in touch. Because going back to what was mentioned previously, a lot of tweens feel ostracized and left out because everyone at that point pretty much has a smart device and all the communication is being done through texting. And so a compromise can be, if you can afford it, your data plan can afford it, get your kid a flip phone when they're in the tweens or whatever high school. Give them that so they don't feel alienated. So maybe that's a compromise. But the smart technology and especially the unlimited use of the internet, the kids are going to find porn. They're going to find porn. And I know there's some people who find that porn is just, that's normal and we shouldn't shame kids into finding porn. But look, the studies are showing, I think the first exposure to porn now is at age 8. Kids stumble upon it at age 8. I don't know how progressive you are, but I don't think it's good for any kid to see porn at age 8. I don't even know if it's any good for any adult to see porn, much less an 8-year-old. So we just my main takeaway is just I'm frustrated. I'm kind of frustrated with the way that we are, and it's like the first step is just admitting the problem, right? Admitting the addiction, and we are addicted to technology. And I think as time goes on, I think we are going to swing on the other side of the pendulum. And I think we're going to come back after we realize what technology is doing to us and our children. And I think people are going to start putting in more restrictions because they're going to be noticing how insidious these apps are. And not only to time in our life that we waste on it, but also to our children's psyche. I mean, some of the things that are posted on these websites about your children is frightening. So that's all I really have to say today. Definitely go check out that New York Times article about Steve Jobs and go check out that On Point episode. It's NPR, but you just look up On Point. That's the name of the actual episode. And just look into it, guys. And as always, if you have time, it would literally take you a minute. Please post a review for NPE Radio. We would appreciate it a lot. And go post a review for Kate's Apothecary and Confessions of an Obese Child. If you feel that any of the information that we provide you has helped you or has informed you, then please just spread the word and tell people about it and post a review. We would really appreciate it. Okay, guys. Until next time, God bless. Take care. Bye-bye.
Earth Radio. Visit us at www.naturopathicearth.com. Follow us on Twitter at Naturopath Earth and subscribe to us on iTunes. Don't forget to leave a review. And remember our core belief at naturopathicearth.com. Let food be thy medicine, let nature be thy healer. See you next time. Music courtesy of Art of Escapism.